In this podcast, we're going to be discussing psychopaths with Professor Tim Boson. Tim, hello.
Hi, Nick.
Now, very unusual subject. How did we get here?
Well, it was interesting, Nick. Back in April, I wrote a little blog about it because I'd come across a research paper written by a researcher at Cambridge who was trying to understand how evolution allowed psychopaths. And let me explain that a little bit. Evolution, the theory of evolution is that when you have a maladaption, the maladaption will gradually be weeded out because it's no longer helpful to humanity. So if you think about evolution as it sustains those things that are useful because society goes on, but it weeds out things that are no longer useful. So the argument here was why something which is very antisocial and harmful to human beings, psychopathy, how was that sustained in society?
Got it. So how does that happen if it's not useful? And it definitely isn't, is it? Or is it?
Well, we've got to think, I think, here of psychopathy as a spectrum. And many of us will have elements, characteristics of psychopathy, though we wouldn't be classified as clinical psychopaths. So it's a set of characteristics, and some of those characteristics can be helpful to society in certain situations. So if we think about some of the characteristics, there's a certain ruthlessness in psychopaths. There's a lack of feeling. Although they can understand and read people very well, they don't actually care about how other people feel. And they're very good at being deceitful and manipulative. So there's various characteristics there which can be quite useful in certain circumstances. Let me explain that, because
it does sound pretty awful, actually, doesn't it? None of that sounds good, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, I should try and avoid being too cynical here, Nick, but if you think about politicians, they often have to be quite manipulative, they have to be quite ruthless, and they have to sometimes just walk over people's feelings because it's in politics, it's a competition to get somewhere. The same might also be said of top business people. And if you're in business and you have to make people redundant, get rid of people, and so on, you have to be quite ruthless to do that. Mm. And if you put yourself too much in terms of thinking about their feelings, you might not be able to carry that out. The most interesting one, I think, is in the medical world, and it's surgeons. And quite a lot of work has been done here. If you think about a surgeon, they're doing something which is pretty tough. And if they worry too much about their patients, then they won't be able to carry out the procedures. And there has been quite a lot of work done on particular, and I won't name names, but there are some brain surgeons working in London. And it's quite clear from the work that's been done that they do have psychopathic tendencies. And one of them actually admitted, a well-known brain surgeon said, look, I realize that if I was worrying about my patients when I'm doing this really tricky operation, I've got to just focus on what I've got to do. So I don't really actually care about the patient. I care about the job I'm doing.
But they must care about the patient too, surely. No? I mean, we would hope so, I suppose.
We're talking about extreme here in terms of someone who's has psychopathic tendencies, but those psychopathic tendencies might be in the sense of the ruthlessness to get the job done. And in that sense, not to worry too much about being empathetic. Now, it's one of the areas, of course, where you do get complaints sometimes in medicine where you say, well, the doctor's really just only interested in the clinical problem and not engaging with the feelings of the patient. Mm. So there is that issue there. There's a tension that can occur.
So it's that kind of lack of bedside manner almost.
Exactly, yes.
So how is it nature or nurture? How does someone, it sounds like I'm looking for the instructions, how does someone become a psychopath?
Well, this is the interesting thing, isn't it? And of course, the nature-nurture argument goes on in all sorts of areas. The tendency is to think, if it's a cultural thing, a bad upbringing, difficult parents, are feeling left out and isolated and so on and so forth, we see that as a cultural thing. The tendency now is to see that as sociopathic rather than psychopathic. And there's an overlap between those two descriptions. But the sociopath tends to be very reactive to the cultural situation, whereas the psychopath may well have something genetic which drives them to behave in a particular way. So that debate goes on. And of course, there's no very clear certainty about either of those particular positions. But psychopaths do show a whole set of characteristics, which I've partly described, which can at one end really spill over at the bad end of the spectrum. And we think of serial killers who have cruelty and sadism, and they're completely deceptive and dishonest. And often, of course, they have a narcissism. They only just focus on themselves and a grandiosity. And one of the things that's quite interesting, which has emerged recently because of the awful case of Lucy Letby, and that is how they want to play a particular role in society, which is almost, I call it the cliche of playing God, where they have control over right. other human beings.
And back to the politicians, perhaps. No, we shouldn't do that. But so how does one deal with a psychopath? How does society deal with them? Clearly, in extreme examples, society shouldn't deal with them. But how do you deal with a psychopath? How do you deal with the brain surgeon who's going to operate on you but seems disinterested?
Well, at that level, with those certain characteristics, society doesn't really deal with them in that way. It's, of course, one of the problems, and particularly with the nature of people who are murderous, that you only find out they're psychopaths later, because they are incredibly good at deceiving people around them, adopting a sort of false persona, so that you might think they're trustworthy and reliable and so on, whereas actually underneath they're just so narcissistic, they're just pushing their own agenda for what they want. So sadly, it's quite difficult to deal with psychopaths at that extreme end, because they're so clever at disguising who they are that you can't identify them easily. It's much easier in a sense to see people who may have some psychopathic tendencies, which might be not caring about their family or whatever, to be able to try and then deal with them. And there are two ways that can be approached. At the extreme end, of course, there's pharmacy, there's drugs, which can suppress certain behaviours, and that's certainly used quite often with sociopaths who lose their temper, for example, and behave in a very antisocial way as a reaction, rather than something that is calculated and thought through. Mm-hmm. With a psychopath, because they think things through very carefully, they're much more difficult to deal with. But you can use psychotherapy as well as I say, pharmacology.
Mm. And if somebody's listening now and thinks, oh dear, I think I've got psychopathic tendencies, they shouldn't overly worry, right? Because it depends how extreme they are.
Absolutely. And if you're aware that you don't have empathy, for example, within your friends or within that isn't necessarily something that you need to be too worried about. In terms of, if you're aware of it, You're coping with it. Yeah. What is interesting is some cases where it's really tricky to identify. And I've been asked, as you can imagine, over the last few weeks, because of the Lucy Letby case, what is going on there? And it's very tricky to identify it. There are various psychologists who've made comments about it and about her behavior. What is odd is that when you look at her background and you look at her behavior, it was described, I think, rather well as she was entirely beige. There was nothing that came through to suggest that she was then going to actually then commit murder on seven neonatal babies. And that was a sort of a really odd an experience for people to understand. You would have expected some sort of symptoms, some sort of characteristics to have demonstrated themselves earlier, but they didn't. Interesting enough, various experts have said they think that she may have been suffering from what's called Munchausen by proxy. And Munchausen by proxy is where you impose illnesses on other people. Right. And her behavior then would be trying to help those neonatal babies by actually terminating them, which is a very extreme idea. But there's obviously something there that's really tricky, because there was no clear, easy diagnosis. And people have said to me, surely someone who commits those sort of crimes must have a mental illness. But it wasn't apparent, and no one diagnosed it. What did happen was that it was noticed that when she was on duty, babies were dying, and when she wasn't on duty, they were surviving. So what, you know, that was the, in a sense, that was the indicator that something was wrong.
It was really entirely statistical and not to do with observation in any sense. Nobody spotted anything. And I guess that comes back to the whole idea that psychopaths are very good at disguising it all and manipulating people.
Exactly. So it's very tricky until something has happened, and at the extreme end it is a crime. And as we've seen, this is a murderous, cruel crime that has taken place. Till that's happened, it's very difficult to spot the psychopath, because they are so good at pretending to relate to someone, whereas in reality they just don't care about other people. And it's so it makes it a very tricky diagnosis to make. No doubt we'll find out some other things happening with the, now we're going to have the public inquiry, but that of course is going to really focus on the management rather than actually on what Lucy Letby herself was
why didn't we spot what was going on, as opposed to why did it happen in the first place. So could it make one horribly sort of, I suppose, cynical and negative about people? Because if it is so difficult to spot, is the temptation not to go around thinking, oh, you know, I can't trust anyone?
Well, we sometimes we feel that, don't we? But there is obviously there's a difference, and sometimes we use these mental illness terms rather loosely and say, oh, someone's a psychopath, whereas their behaviour may have just been rather alien and unpleasant towards you. Where the symptoms mount up and the characteristics come, and that's where you need a proper sort of clinical diagnosis of what's going on. And I say often that is almost too late. So I don't want people to go away from this podcast feeling they can't trust anyone, but I did say they may have had some experience where they feel someone has been deceitful or someone has behaved in a rather ruthless way, and they may wonder, well, you know, why has that person not got the empathy for me and behaved in this rather ruthless way towards me?
Yes, I suppose so. And if that is to be the case, where we don't spot things that easily, it's just another facet of kind of society and the way we live, I guess.
Yes, and I think, I mean, there may be elements, and this may be also true, of the Lucy Letby case, of where people go into some sort of depression. And you may remember from the court case, two vital pieces of police evidence were actually on notes that she had written, post-it notes, in which she had scrawled things like, I killed them on purpose because I'm not good enough, or something like in those tones. Mm. So she was presumably then in some sort of mental state, but because they're so good at deception, no one really spotted it. And that is the difficulty with the psychopath. They are so clever at feigning particular responses to things and feelings which they don't actually have.
Now, this has been a little bit on the depressing side, actually, Tim, in a way. Are there any upsides we can take out of all this? You did say that, you know, evolutionary-wise, you would wonder why they existed, but there are upsides to it. Can we maybe emphasise the positive?
Well, I think in terms of, in some ways, we're rather cynical about politicians or business leaders who run big corporations, but and this might be the evolutionary side. Society, because we are a social group and we operate in very large social groups, we do need people who are prepared to be decisive and take decisions. Now, you might say, you know, a very characteristic example of that would be if we go back to the Second World War and people think about someone like Winston Churchill, who, when you know, he should have been in a really bad state because everything was going wrong. Say, for example, 1940, 1941, everything was a terrible situation. And yet he kept going. Now, he's an interesting case because he did suffer from depression. He had his dog days.
Yes.
Black dog, he called them, when he was, you know, really not in a good mood. So, but he also had a decisiveness and a determination. And maybe that's an element, you know, that society needs leaders. We need help often to take us through difficult periods where perhaps normal, well, what's normal, but someone like me anyway, would not be able to make those decisive decisions or be ruthless enough. I mean, you just think about having to fight wars, and you think about now, say, Russia and Ukraine, making very difficult decisions. I mean, the body count in Ukraine is pretty awful, and yet they're having to fight on for their country and their idea of freedom and so on. So someone's making those decisions and sending people to the battlefront to do that. And if you were too indecisive because you were worried about all the, you wouldn't be able to do that. So the positive side, you were looking for something positive. I think the positive side is that there can be a decisiveness and a determination, which is driven by a different form of empathy, they're understanding the situation, but realizing that there's something else that has to be done, which may require sacrifice and so on. So that sort of decisiveness, I think, can be quite useful. And I think that probably explains why in evolution, the what we might call the maladaption of psychopathy has continued. Well, I don't want our listeners to feel this has been too negative, but we're always, I mean, evolution is a fascinating area, and it goes back to that element of nature nurture. We're always trying to understand that, and it may be that we're moving so far ahead now with understanding DNA and understanding how genes work, we may be in a situation where we can actually identify the genetic makeup, which will give you a disposition, let's put it like that, a disposition to psychopathic tendencies. And that might be helpful in terms of certainly trying to screen out people who are on the far end of the spectrum who could commit serial killings and so on, because they're
gosh, what an ethical minefield that one would be.
Well, it's happening in a way, isn't it, already, in terms of we see it with clinical situations where you have a genetic predisposition to some, say, cancer in some area or other. And, of course, Angelina Jolie is a very good example of that, because there was a disposition there to breast cancer within her family, and she took a decision to try and ameliorate that. So we're going to be in that situation. I mean, it is... You could say, well, it gets tricky because then, oh, you know, are we moving towards designer babies and so on? I think we're still a long way off from that. But we are being able to identify through genetics certain areas of weakness. And it may be that we're in a situation later on of identifying problems at the far end of the spectrum with psychopathy.
Interesting thought. Professor Tim Boson, thank you very much for an interesting look at psychopaths and psychopathy and sociopathy as well. If you'd like to support our podcasts, you can do that by making a donation at mix926.com/donate. Professor Tim Boson, thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Nick. It's been a pleasure.